The Science Show on RN, and I can see a robot over there. Now, do you need an algorithm, maths, for your legs to walk? Seems you do, especially if they're robotic. Aaron Ames is Professor of Engineering at Caltech, and I'm with him in his great big lab.
We do all things legs and dynamic motions. So basically, we want to make robots move fast, dynamically, move in human-like ways. So we start with walking robots, and we try to get them to walk around the lab. And the lab's big because we want them to be able to roam freely. Ultimately, we want to take these robots out into the wild, learn how to walk on different terrain types, walk in scenarios where humans might not be able to go, so disaster response, space exploration. And then ultimately, we want to take the ideas that we learn from having robots walk around and translate them to robotic assistive devices.
In the far distance, I can see quite a big one. Is that one of your big robots that's going to walk around?
Yeah, the far distance is Cassie. That's one of the newest members of the lab. And that one has walked actually around the Caltech campus. And we're developing new algorithms to do dynamic things on that robot. So, for example, we're trying to make it jump and run. So the idea is to really break the mold and stop having robots walk like robots, right? And start to have robots move like humans. And by understanding that process, we can understand locomotion at a fundamental level. And then again, we can take and translate it to assistive devices to make humans walk better.
But the problem is that if I'm walking, there are so many processes involved, not falling over, of coordinating your legs, getting the balance. I mean, it goes on and on.
Yep.
It took a year probably when you were growing up, when you were tiny. So you're getting all that into some sort of set of algorithms, are you?
That's the beauty of locomotion, is that it's a seemingly simple thing, right? Everybody walks around, or most people walk around, right? And they do it so elegantly. But then, as you said, when you start thinking about everything it takes for us to walk, that coordination of all those degrees of freedom of the human body to this rhythmic pattern that keeps us stable, but it's not stable in the sense of we're standing, it's stable in the sense of we're falling forward and catching ourselves continuously. So that's what we call dynamic stability. And we have to capture all that. We have to capture it first mathematically, which we spent a lot of time doing in this lab, and then how do we generate it? How do we generate those dynamic motions? And we have a bunch of theorems that say how all this works, right? And that's wonderful and beautiful, actually. It's very pretty when you start breaking down the math. But ultimately, what that math means is it results in algorithms. And those algorithms do that for the robots. It does all the things that your human body spent a year or two learning. It coordinates the movements of these highly articulated robotic systems into a simple and elegant movement on the back end that we hope captures the basic elements of locomotion that humans display so easily.
May I ask you a rude question?
Yes.
Why didn't you just use a bunch of wheels?
I get that question a lot. I get, how come you don't use a bunch of wheels? And how come you don't use a bunch of legs? Because we study two-legged robots. I think first and foremost, because bipedal locomotion is hard, and that makes it interesting. By studying the hard problems, you can try to find that mathematic representation that is the deepest. And then by doing that, we can translate to, again, humans. Humans have two legs. So if you want to understand how humans walk, you have to start with two-legged robots. Finally, legged robots can go places that wheels can't. So try to take your car up a mountain. It's not going to work very well, right? But legged robots can get up amazingly steep slopes. So if you want to get robots to go places where there's interesting science, let's say, on Mars, you're going to have to get away from wheels, get away from the traditional sort of rover paradigm, and get legs out there to discover the really interesting areas where there might have been life.
And this might be a good time to talk to Rachel, who's standing over there with one leg. Yeah, you've got two legs, but one leg is bent, and underneath it is something very complicated. Hello, Rachel.
Hi. So this is called a powered transfemoral prosthesis, which means that it's for an amputee that has lost their leg above the knee. So this has a powered knee and an ankle. And the idea of a powered prosthesis is that then the user will expend less energy to walk, and we can also program it so that the user can have a more symmetric gait when they walk.
Is it complicated for you to use?
It took a while to get used to because it's very unnatural to walk with a different leg, and I have to trust the robot fully to put my full weight on it in order for it to respond to me and walk properly.
Are you willing to have a go now?
Yes.
Which is, yeah, quite fast. I'm having to dragging along the floor a bit, but yeah, normal pace. Yeah, that'll do. I don't want to wear you out. Right. How did that feel?
I'm getting more used to it, but it is tiring.
And does it ever seize up?
Sometimes things become loose because robots get shy when you want to work with them, and so then you have to turn it off.
But the idea is presumably that you would have that leg given to people who want to walk because, as you said, they've lost a leg and they want something that feels natural rather than one than just a stump at the end.
Correct. And also we can enable this device to have new behaviors so that the user can be more comfortable walking up on slopes or on different terrains and also be able to adapt to the individual user so it's more comfortable for them.
Rachel, are you doing an engineering degree?
Correct. I'm getting my PhD in mechanical engineering.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
And back to you, sir. I just wonder, with various outfits around, there's MIT, Rodney Brooks, and there's the outfit in Brisbane, QUT, and so on. Do you coordinate much?
We work with a lot of people around the world. There's a couple labs that are especially advanced in the context of bipedal locomotion, and we work with them. At the same time, we're, of course, focused on developing our own methods and trying to push them forward. In some ways, there's also a friendly competition happening worldwide, right? The canonical example is Boston Dynamics. Everyone's seen their videos. They do amazing stuff. So the question is, can we do things like that? Maybe better at some point, but at the same time, understand the mathematics, publish papers on it, right? We're not a company, we're a university, and the goal is to create knowledge and disperse it to everyone that wants to use it. So in that context, we collaborate to generate more knowledge, and then we try to push the envelope forward and get all those ideas out there.
And you're concentrating clearly on things to help people who can't walk and places where they can't go. How do you feel about the general concern about robots that they're going to supplant us in all sorts of jobs?
It's a concern in some aspects, and in some, I think it's an opportunity. I think it would be disingenuous to say that there won't be some jobs lost to robots, especially the repetitive ones. At the same time, a lot of the jobs that could be lost to robots already have been. I mean, entire factories are essentially automated at this point. So where there's an interesting opportunity is robots working with people, even in a factory context, right? So you can imagine that the simple things have been taken. Now you have to have robots help with the complex things, gluing something in a very fine way, things that are hard for robots to do. They have a difficult time with complex geometries and parts. So you can imagine robots working next to people, making their labor more productive, working with them. And that's really the trend we're seeing right now in the context of autonomy, is getting robots into natural environments rather than pre-scripted environments, and working with people in those environments. So you could imagine a robot at a fast food place helping people cook more burgers. So you start to see robots not as these big behemoths on the factory floor, but as small, dynamic, modular things that just make your effort more productive, right? Yeah. That make you more productive as a worker.
One little thought, finally, in a program that we did on ABC Radio a long time ago about even small robots, which are not human-like at all, but maybe just vacuum cleaners or something like that. When people had them and they went bust, they wanted not a new one, but their own one back fixed, as if they had some sort of relationship. Yeah. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. It's amazing what I've seen with my robots and the emotional connection that people draw to them, especially the more that robots move in natural and human-like ways. And again, they don't have to look human. In fact, I think looking human is actually a disservice to robots. Though if you try to put artificial skin on them and all that, there's some people that do that, and I'm not taking away from what they do. But as a mechanical structure, if it moves in a natural way, humans become attached. So I have robots in this lab that only have legs. There's no upper body, there's no head, and they'll walk around, and you'll see students and kids, even young kids, come up and just be in awe of the motion and start to become connected. They sort of assume some sort of life force there because it's moving like something that has life. And the interesting thing then to what you were saying is, if we come up and push the robot, let's say, the kids will say, don't hurt it, Don't hurt it. Leave it alone. So even in a couple minutes, there's this emotional connection that's made. So you can imagine over time, if you have these robots around you, helping you every day, day in and day out, you start to associate a certain emotional connection. And I think that's a positive thing. They're actually looking at robots for old persons' homes, to help out the elderly, hospitals, all these places where there's just a finite number of people and the nurse can't always be in the room, but having something nearby that moves feels comforting. And it can also help you make sure you don't fall out of bed, help you to the bathroom. So there's lots of places where robots can make our lives better at just a companion level if we really study the basic drive behind this human-robot connections that are forming.